Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the Huffines Sports Medicine Podcast. We're so glad that you decided to take the time to download us, put us on your MP3 player, and are listening to us today. As always, we're trying to bring you the wide and varied world that is sports medicine, and so we're so pleased today to have Mr. John Tangway with us today. He's the Director of Performance Nutrition here at Texas A&M. He comes to us from the University of New Hampshire, where he got a master's degree in nutrition sciences, and quite a good alpine skier. But since he's come to Texas, we don't have a lot of snow, and so he's made that transition to running and does a lot of distance events.
Yes,
welcome, John.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. Let's just get started off with a real simple question. How does someone become a sports nutritionist?
Well, it's kind of an up-and-coming field, I guess. It's basically a background in nutritional sciences is where it comes from. I have actually an undergraduate degree in zoology, which is really a basic biology degree, and I was always kind of interested in that. Also had been, an athlete in the lower levels, not an elite athlete by any means, but always interested in sports and involved in sports. And was looking for a way to apply my interest in science and my interest in sports. And kind of in my undergraduate degree and in looking into what I was going to do in my master's, decided that, nutrition was the way that I was going to get into those fields. Through my studies and through my master's project and through my internship to become a dietitian, kind of focused on sports as well as nutrition, and it's kind of all worked out for me, so it's really been great.
Well, it's really nice, that interaction of nutrition and exercise, and there are so many people in both of our fields that are very interested in that interaction, and so it's great to have someone that's got the experience in the sports world and also has the experience in the nutrition world to kind of marry those two things together. So that's a great combination. How closely do you work with coaches?
Actually, we work very closely with the coaches. We'll interact with all of the sports staff, whether that be the strength and conditioning coach, the athletic trainer, or the head and assistant coaches. It's really what individual identifies that there may be some sort of nutrition related concern, mm-hmm. and that's the person that we'll communicate with. Mm-hmm. We're involved in team meetings, work specifically with coaches if they have a specific athlete that they want me to work with, based off of whatever it is, whether it's, performance, looking to increase their performance, or, body comp results that we've given to the trainers, the coaches.
So you handle most of the body composition stuff, the measuring of
yes,
fat,
we do.
Fat and stuff like
we
that?
We do all the body composition testing for the athletes at Texas A&M. Yeah. We're lucky enough to have a DEXA machine here, yeah. and we utilize that to do the body composition testing. It's a really great resource that we have here to give the athletes that immediate feedback. We'll do body composition as soon as they get here in August or September, and then we'll do one again, starting to come up to our next round of body composition testings after they're done with either their season or their off-season training. And, really the athletes see that they're making the gains in their testing and their lifts in the weight room, and they can see that that's translating into gains in muscle and loss of body fat, hopefully, usually,
Yeah. And for those of you listening, body composition we normally refer to is just the percentage of body fat that someone has or how much lean muscle. And using a DEXA, that's dual X-ray absorptometry. That's kind of the gold standard. That's the best way to measure it if you can. And so we're fortunate to be able to do that. And that's great. That does provide them a baseline that they can look at. Now, obviously, the people listen. We have people that listen to this podcast that are in different kinds of sports. So the question always comes up: how do I adjust what I eat for my sport? Is there a lot of difference between the different sports and what they need to eat or the caloric intake?
Certainly, for the caloric intake, really the basic nutritional basics are what they are. You know, you've got to have a certain amount of carbohydrate, a certain amount of protein, certain amount of fats in your diet, and you know, those are the baselines that I teach with all the athletes. You know, really it will vary based on the athlete's individual goals. So, you know, whether they're trying to, you know, lose body fat or increase muscle mass, or I'll have different recommendations for more power sports. You know, the baseball athletes, the football athletes, the softball athletes, volleyball athletes. You know, other sports are really kind of more endurance. You know, things like soccer,
right.
cross country athletes, and you know, we'll focus a little bit more on the carbohydrate intake for those individuals and making sure that they've fueling their bodies for the more endurance aspect of their sport. But I mean, the basics are really there. It's waking up and having a good, healthy breakfast, and you know, finding out what the athlete likes for their breakfast. There's no right answer for any individual. And that's one thing that I think helps us be successful, is we kind of personalize it and, you know, make the nutrition plan theirs and something that they're really going to follow. If I give them, you know, you have to eat plain oatmeal every morning, they're not going to follow it, you know.
Right.
You got to find something they're going to like. So. Right.
Well, I think you hit on something that's very important that gets lost, I think, in today's society. Is it's amazing to me how many people don't eat breakfast. And it seems to be very important.
And our athletes are the same way. You know, they're
are they really?
They're part of. That's one thing that you know, when you come here, you're coming out of high school and you've always been at home, and you had your parents usually to help support you and to provide you with some of these meals. And this is, the athletes are kind of out on their own now, and they're surviving on their own, and they're you know, they've got to make those choices for themselves. So they've got to maybe get up 15 or 20 minutes early to run to the dining hall to grab a bagel or something for breakfast before they go to class, and find time in their busy class schedule in between classes and weights to go to the dining hall again, or to go back to their apartment and find some lunch, because they're going to have practice for 3 hours in the afternoon. And if they don't do breakfast, they don't do lunch, they're not going to make it through practice. They're not going to maximize that training time. And that's going to affect them down the line when it comes to games and comes to their performance that matters.
Yeah. I think that's what people forget, is that these athletes that they see on TV, college athletes in particular, are still young adults, and they're still figuring out how to do these things. And you know, it's like, oh geez, I have some independence, and you know, I get to sleep a little bit later, but then they wind up sacrificing important things like breakfast and eating correctly and so forth. So it's great that you guys play that role in also helping them guide that in that development area as well.
And a lot of the athletes come here really with a reliance on fast foods and convenience foods, and that's another thing that we work with them with. As far as grocery shopping tours, I'll take some of the athletes and take them to the grocery store and walk them around the grocery store and help them find healthy options that can be really prepared simply and quickly. You know, and then we've got a kitchen area in our right next to my office, so I can help them with food preparation if they're not familiar with that, if they don't know how to grill a chicken breast, or you know, grill a steak, or even, you know, boil some vegetables, you know, and I can help them put together simple meal options that can be prepared as part of their busy schedule, and you know, help them maximize what they're doing as far as their athletic performance.
Sure. Yeah, and I know there are some programs out there that primarily deal with weight loss, and that's one of the things they do, is the grocery store a survey where they go in, the RD goes in with an individual and helps them, and that's absolutely valuable to folks. And
it's a great resource that we have here at Texas A&M. Yeah.
Yeah. Do the caloric needs, or how much food an athlete eats, does that change where they're at in the season? For like football, we're getting close to the end of football season, probably another couple months. Are they eating differently now than they did, say, in May?
In May, for sure. You know, May is when it's kind of a downtime for them, and we try to teach them that they should be eating differently. You know, when they're less active, they need to have less calories, a little bit of a less reliance on carbohydrates, a little bit of a higher protein content. You know, just to try to maintain that muscle and maintain that body weight, not have it go too much in either direction. You know, you have guys that when they have time off, they gain weight, and you have guys that when they have time off, they'll lose weight. So, you know, you kind of try to identify which individual has that tendency and work with them in that way to, you know, either make sure that they're maintaining their eating habits and not falling off, or, again, making sure that they're cutting back a little bit and not going in the wrong direction, going too high.
So everybody talks about supplements. They think about they think they don't eat well enough, and so you know the supplement industry has grown quite large in this country. How important are supplements to athletes?
I think that supplements can give athletes can take them to the next step. You know, it can give them maybe a performance benefit, maybe just a psychological benefit. You know, for some of these things. And
so the placebo effect works in this case sometimes.
I think it does.
Yeah.
we utilize that certainly with some of the things that we provide for our athletes and recommend for them. But you know, really what we try to do with that is we try to build the foundation of a good diet, you know, and that's what we talk to them about. When an athlete comes into my office and asks about taking a certain supplement, you know, the first thing that I'll talk to them about is their diet. You know, what are you doing for breakfast? Are you snacking throughout the day? What are you doing for lunch? What do you do before practice? What's your recovery? You know, what are you doing for dinner? We get that straight. And if there's concerns, if there's problems with that, if they're not eating anything in the first half of the day and, you know, doing dinner after practice and then another dinner at 10 or 11 or 12 o'clock at night, a supplement's not going to help them at all. It's not going to help them overcome their dietary faults. So we'll work on that first. And then I believe that a supplement could potentially help them, you know, take their performance to the next level, help them find something that's not only safe, but it's going to meet their goals, it's going to be effective, and it's going to be legal.
Oh, that brings up a good point. Are there guidelines that they have to abide by for the NCAA?
For the NCAA, there are a list of banned substances that the athletes can't take. And we as employees of an NCAA university are able to provide some products for individuals, but we have guidelines for what we can provide for them too. So
yeah,
give them simple vitamins and minerals, carbohydrates, recovery products, and bars, and that's really about it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You hear the stories especially on the international scene about somebody has tested positive for some banned substance, and the first thing they say is, "Oh, I took that accidentally, or that was in a food product that I didn't realize." Has it really been your experience, or to your knowledge, or many of these banned substances and products that people don't know they're taking them?
Yeah, a lot of the athletes don't necessarily know what's banned, and we've got companies even in this town that sell products that have banned substances in them. So you've really got to be, you know, proactive with the athletes and educate them. If you're ever going to take anything, bring it into my office. Don't even go buy it. Bring the nutrition, the supplement facts label into my office, and I'll look at it and I'll see if it's something that's going to be okay. And usually when I'm making a supplement recommendation, it's going to be something that's got a third party certification. So it's a supplement company who's paid for an outside group to come in and test their products and make sure that it's free of any banned substances. Because, I mean, if you think about a supplement factory, there's all these powders and things floating all over the place. And, you know, even if this product doesn't have banned substances, and there's the opportunity for contamination and the supplement industry is not very regulated like the drug industry is in the United States. In case a couple of years back where some NFL players tested positive for a banned diuretic, and the diuretic wasn't actually on the label, but they were adding it to the product to help with its effectiveness. And
wow.
So, you know, you just can't be too careful with that stuff.
So would that be a good rule of thumb that you would tell everybody only buy supplements that have gone through a third party certification?
Certainly for safety reasons, that would be a good recommendation. I mean, not everyone's out there getting drug tested, so.
Right.
But certainly for safety reasons, you know, you don't want to put some of those things in your body anyway. They're not good for your overall health.
Right. Well, we've been talking about athletes primarily. Let's kind of talk about the weekend warrior, kind of recreational folks, because a lot of people are like that. You know, there's a lot of talk about what kind of calories you eat, what kind of food you eat. Does it matter where calories come from? Big general question there, huh? Especially if someone's working out on a regular basis.
Right. I mean, I think that it definitely does. You know, you need a certain amount of carbohydrate, a certain amount of protein to support what you're doing, even if you're a weekend warrior. And there's a article that just came out this week, I think, with a nutrition professor who lost 30 pounds eating just Twinkies and Ho-Hos and things like that, you know, just packaged foods. And he lowered his cholesterol levels, increased his good cholesterol levels, lowered his triglycerides, and, you know, saw all these good health outcomes. But you know, over the long term, that's not going to be a good thing, you know. So
yeah,
it does.
It's hard to eat that all the time.
Yeah. So it does really matter, you know, what you're putting into your body. You want to have lean sources of protein. You want to have lots of healthy fats, lots of those omega-3 fatty acids in your diet. You know, you want to have plenty of fruits and vegetables that are loaded with vitamins and minerals and antioxidants. And as far as your long term health, that's what's going to be the best thing for you.
Right. And we are all in this for the long term. I think so right. often we look at it in the short term, and we have to remember that all of us have got a long time here, and so we want to. The things that we do today may actually affect us 40 years down the road,
right?
But it'll really make us miserable 40 years from now. Yeah. So let's talk about after the workout. You know, there's a big industry now about giving you recovery things, mm-hmm. and there's many companies out there that are claiming that their product will help you recover the best. Is there a good post-workout meal? Is there something that we should be taking in after we work out to help us recover?
I wouldn't say there's one specific thing. You know, it's really what works for you. Now, if you're doing, you know, a Gatorade recovery shake, if you're doing a Muscle Milk recovery shake, if you're doing a chocolate milk, if you're doing a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, if you're doing just a half a turkey and cheese sandwich, you know, all those things contain essentially the same nutrients. You know, there's a certain amount of carbohydrate, there's a certain level of protein. And that's what's important. The more important is the timing of that. So making sure that you're putting something in your body within about 30 minutes after your workout is really the most important thing.
Cool. So make sure you eat.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah. It's like make sure you have breakfast and make sure you eat.
Right.
Okay. Many of us are getting older. That goes without saying, I guess. In what ways should someone's diet change as they get older?
Well, I mean, as you get older, typically you're not burning as many calories.
Right.
You know, individuals will tend to put on body fat as they get older. So, you know, usually as you get older, your activity level changes. You're not quite as active. And, you know, so typically your calorie intake will need to go down. You know, usually as individuals get older, they get a little bit more conscious of their health and their long-term health, those things that we were just talking about. So, you know, that's something that older individuals will tend to focus on a little bit more is making sure that they're getting their fruits and vegetables, getting their, yeah. You know, their vitamins and minerals in their diet, their dietary fiber, those healthy fats that are going to be good for your long-term health. That's something that, you know, older individuals certainly need to focus on because they can't overcome the mistakes anymore that they may have been making as a younger individual.
Right. They don't have the time left.
Right.
Yeah, right. So, you know, this eating thing, even though it seems pretty simple, nowadays it seems pretty complex as well, because you go into the store and there are all these different foods and all they have done different compositions, and we've already been talking about the different ratios and so forth. So if someone wanted to get help with their eating, put together an eating plan, I know they can go to registered dietitians, and in many states, because of licensure laws, RDs are the ones that have to put together eating plans. But I know that there's this group of folks out there that may not be as well trained. Many times they go by the term nutritionist or sports nutritionist. You want to tell us a little bit about what your recommendations if someone came to you and said, tell me what I need to look for somebody that's a professional to give me dietary help?
Sure. I mean, that's something that can be confusing. There can be people out there calling themselves dietitians. You know, you hear the term dietitian, you hear the term nutritionist. For the layperson, you may not know the difference.
Right.
A registered dietitian is someone who has got a degree related to nutrition. They've gone through a 6-month to a year long dietary internship, where they've worked in a hospital as an intern. They've also worked in a community setting as an intern. Worked in a food service organization. They've met certain qualifications and requirements. They've got a pretty extensive educational background, and they passed a national exam to receive that certification as a registered dietitian. So when you see that name attached to an individual, this person is an expert. As far as a nutritionist is concerned, these individuals, you know, may very well be educated on nutrition. They may have read a lot about that stuff, but they haven't gone through the same kind of standardized education. And when you're meeting with a nutritionist, you don't necessarily know what you're getting. Anyone can call themselves a nutritionist.
Right.
You can I remember seeing when I was in school, there was a professor who registered their dog to a mail-in nutritionist certification. Oh. And they got their dog registered as a nutritionist. So it can be anyone can call themselves a nutritionist.
So you don't really know what you're getting, as you said.
Exactly. There's no level of regulation as far as that's concerned.
Right. And none of us would go to a physician that didn't have a medical degree.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I'd remind the listeners that Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here in the United States showed very conclusively in 2004 that the second leading actual cause of death in the United States is a combination of physical inactivity and poor diet. So diet is, and nutrition is a huge portion of healthy living and well-being. And so if you're going to get advice about your diet, we want you to go to somebody who knows what they're doing. So that's one of your first criteria, is are they an RD or not? So we're going to wrap up here, John. As we always ask people, any kind of last words, take-home messages for the audience that you would like to give them?
Nutrition is my area of expertise, and it's something that I get really excited about. And, you know, it's something that, as far as for the elite athlete as well as the weekend warrior, it's something that can really be important as far as for you maximizing your performance if you're an athlete and just enjoying your time that you're being active if you're just the average individual. So certainly nutrition is something that is really important as far as your overall health and your well-being. And it's, you know, if anyone's out there looking for any more information, you know, I'm a member of the American Dietetic Association, and that's the group of dietitians in the United States. I'm also a member of SCAN, which is sports cardiovascular and wellness dietitians, and we're a dietary practice group within the American Dietetic Association. And I'm also a member of a new group that's being formed that's called the Collegiate and Professional Sports Dietitians. And this is a group of dietitians who work in and individuals who work in professional sports, collegiate sports, as well as tactical settings, so in the armed forces as well.
Yeah, I guess we would want the military to be well-fed.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So, John, thank you so much for being here, taking the time to be here with us. I'd like to thank everyone listening for also taking the time to download us and listen today. I would invite you to come back next week. You never know who we're going to have here in the podcast booth with us. Anything else we need to take care of, Justin? Justin shakes his head, even though he has a microphone this week. So we'll turn it over for our closing comments from John. And thank you so much. And remember, have a healthy and active week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.